This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. Here, Reggie discusses how we suffer when we freeze against the natural flow and movement of our experience. That defensiveness is expressed as holding and tension in the body. In somatic meditation, we release tension and liberate the karma of unlived experiences. This talk was given at the 2003 Winter Datun Retreat, held in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado.
This afternoon I want to have us work on posture. Posture is sometimes considered a preliminary to meditation practice, but actually meditation is pretty much entirely, especially at the more advanced levels, working with your posture. In Tibetan Buddhism, it's said that the body is the mind. The mind is the body. There actually is no separation. The body is a more concrete expression of our mind, but it is a complete expression of our mind and mental state. And the way we gain access to our awareness is actually through our body. So that's the basic view, and there's obviously a lot to it, and there's a lot to explore. And from now until the end of the Datun, we're going to be working to understand what it means to say that the body is a it's an expression of our mind. And this is meant in a very literal way. For example, we are only partially aware of our bodies at this time. And the larger area of our body we're actually not aware of. And those areas are precisely our ignorance, our areas of ignorance. So if there's a part of our body we're actually not aware of, it's because we have sealed that off owing to our ignorance, owing to our unwillingness to see aspects about our own energy and our own history and our own life. So the way to gain access to our karma is actually through our bodies. And we'll be working with that a lot. Now, I'm not going to give a long talk on the body today, and I think actually that what I'd like to do is work with you. Today we're going to do posture, in the future we'll be doing other things, and gradually unfold a certain kind of point of view or a certain kind of understanding of our own individual body-mind situation. We'll do it that way rather than me presenting some kind of big picture at the beginning. So this is going to accumulate as we go. And when we do certain kinds of practice or certain kinds of explorations, at that time I'll point out to you, do you see how this is, or this is what this means, or this is how this connects. And hopefully by the end of the Datun, you'll have a pretty comprehensive view of the way in which working with our body is our way to deepen our awareness and unpack all of our secrets that are holding us back. Where is this all coming from? You know, I should tell you at the beginning, give you a little sense of the pedigree of the information and the practices we're going to be doing. You know, essentially, really, this comes from Tibetan yoga. In Tibetan Buddhism, working with the body is the way in which you accelerate your own development. You can sit and you can follow your breath and you can, you know, work with yourself in that way, and that's very good. But at a certain point, you hit a wall and you begin to realize that you're not gaining access to certain aspects. You feel that your awareness is too small. It's restricted. And even though maybe your mind is very still, it's still in a kind of a small way. And it isn't lively. You don't feel, you feel peaceful, but there's when people meet you with their suffering, there's something that holds you back. Your awareness isn't, it's not open really. It's not flexible and responsive, and it's not, it's protecting itself. This is very subtle, but you feel it. And you also feel that, you know, you read in the text and it says that the nature of your awareness is the Dharma Dhatu, which is all time and all space. And you say to yourself, well, you know, that's what the texts say, but I'm not really feeling that. I'm feeling that my awareness is about like this. But it's not all time and all space. So you begin to become inspired to go further in your own practice. And the teachings that are given at that point to people are known as the six yogas of Naropa, or Tsalung, which is the beginning to explore and work with your body in a much more direct and much more subtle way. And through doing that practice, that is how you actually change your awareness. That's how you begin to open up further. Now you could say, why is it? Why is it that way? Why is actually working with my body a way to open up my awareness further? Because we have frozen our experience in midstream from the beginning of time. Things happen to us in our life, and we don't have the willingness to allow what occurs to us to enter our experience, to take shape, to impact us, to generate feelings, to come to fruition and to dissipate. You know, that's the natural process of human experience. Human experience is like the weather. The storms blow down, they come from the west, they roll in, the rain, you know, it pounds the earth, and you know, lightning and thunder are everywhere, and it's raining sideways, the wind is unbelievable. And then the storm moves out. And the storm has completely expended itself. And then the sun comes out and the sky is brilliant blue and the air is so clear and it's so cool. And that kind of natural process is also true of our experience. We are, as human beings, our nature is for things to occur, for us to respond, and then the storm moves on. But what we do is we freeze our experience constantly. Something comes up and we immediately, it's sort of like, uh-oh, here it comes. And so there's an immediate defensiveness. And then something actually gets in and it's actually okay, and then we try to hang on to it. So the ego is constantly freezing and pushing away and pulling in and holding on and doing all of these things. And it doesn't, you know, it's sort of like this all the time with us. We're either holding on or we're warding off. And where does that experience go? Because the thing is, you can't ward something off until you actually know what it is. You can't ward it off until it's already happened. What happens is it comes in through our sense organs, it comes into our body, we feel it. But then the process comes of we don't acknowledge it. We don't allow it to actually go through its process. We don't let it into our awareness. We don't let it play itself through. And it gets trapped in our body. If you have a skilled person look at your body, they can pretty much tell you the history of all the traumatic things that have happened to you and all the ways in which we have adjusted our body and holding ourselves so we don't have to actually really feel anything. And we go through the day like that, basically. And we go through our lives like that. The problem is that all of the experience that has been incomplete is in our bodies. And if we are people who really are completely shut down, our bodies still know. Our bodies register. Our bodies You know, our bodies don't have any shield. The only thing that has a shield is our mind. So basically what we end up with, all the experience comes into our bodies, and then we have the shield, which is right across the throat. It's above the, it's right at the base of the skull, and we don't let it come up, and it gets trapped down here, and it can't exhaust itself. It can't play through. That's what we call karma. That's what karma is. It's experience that we have not lived. We haven't fully lived it. We sort of saw it was about to happen. We saw it coming. It started to rise in us, and we pushed it back down again. If we do that too much, then we become psychologically ill or physically ill. And the problem is that that kind of a state of mind, which is, you know, basically when our whole life is being lived from our neck up, it's a very shallow kind of life. And when we, as particularly people in the Western world, sit down to meditate, this is kind of what we're meditating with. We're meditating with this little part of ourselves right here. And part of the meditative process for many people is that they do not want to know what is going on below their neck. And meditation becomes a way of staying up in your head, strangely enough. So this is not just a Western problem, although it is really much worse in Western culture for many reasons, you know, which we might go into, and we don't really have to, having to do with the history of our culture, having to do with the nature of modern life, and so on. But it's also a problem in other cultures, and it's a problem really in any human culture where you have a kind of socialization that occurs where a lot of experience is not really okay, and it has to be pushed down. So it was a problem in Tibet, much less degree, but it was definitely there. So when you begin to realize that, you know, your awareness is pretty small, you need to begin to go into your body, and you need to start uncovering the treasure troves of awareness that are blocked and locked and trapped in different places in the body. And by unearthing the karma and being willing to live through the experience that you've been holding down for a long time, what that does is, strangely enough, when experience comes up and emotion comes up, it actually is like fuel for your awareness. Your own inborn wisdom is like a fire that it's fed by experience that is coming up. So when we come to a program like this and we start to sit, a lot of things start coming up. And I don't know if anything started coming up yet. But this is why we're here. We are here to provide a space that is so big that we can actually begin to allow the full richness and potential of who we have not been willing to be our whole lives, to let that to begin to come up. And in the beginning, it comes up in terms of, it's very painful. We realize how, you know, really, frankly, how fucked up we are, and how anxious we are, and how afraid we are, and how we are always, you know, we're so, you know, neurotic in terms of basically trying to control things all the time. This actually is the dawning of awareness, and when that begins to happen, of course, the first thing that happens is your self-image takes a heavy hit. You know, because we thought we were actually in pretty good shape. And especially when you sign up for the Datu and you feel like, hey, you know, I'm in really great shape. I'm going to go and sit for a month and it's going to be great. I'm going to go up there. It's going to be really peaceful. I'm going to get plenty of sleep. Food's going to be fabulous. And, you know, we come up here with a certain amount of fear naturally, but also, you know, we think we're going to do okay. And then we get into space and we begin to see all kinds of things about ourselves. And this is actually the point. This is actually why we're here. And seeing how anxious we are, or seeing how freaked out we are, or seeing how afraid we are of other people, or how awkward we are with other people, you know, seeing that is... this is the experience that we have been not willing to look at. these painful experiences are actually have been part of us, and when they start to come up, it is a sign of relaxation and confidence that we can admit this into our state of being and carry on. These are experienced as painful. It's like when your foot goes to sleep and then you move and it starts to wake up, and it feels, as the nerves become alive, it really hurts for a little while. And this is a sign of waking up. It's a sign of the process of human life. The notion of the grandiose human ego, it's not really a very healthy thing. It's not really part of the human organism. You don't find it in indigenous cultures. The kind of ego that we are encouraged to develop, and really, in a sense, must develop in modern society to survive, you will not find this in indigenous cultures. It's not like that. The idea of a solid self that is consistent and is always the same and is competent, you know, those things that define the sort of modern self-ideal, they don't really exist in other cultures. The sense of self comes and goes. It's very porous. It's constantly changing. It's very much dependent on other people. And that's a much healthier thing, because that doesn't... The problem with the modern style of ego is that we have to repress probably 95% of what goes on in order to maintain it. We have to refuse to acknowledge that much of our experience in order to maintain a coherent sense of self. Believe it or not, we do not have to be coherent. We don't have to be, and we don't have to be consistent, and we don't have to actually live up to anything, ever, whatsoever. You know, all of that stuff, what Freud called the superego, is, it's a modern thing, and it's not necessary. We can learn to live in a much more fluid, much more flexible way, and any little time we start to become some kind of rigidified sense of self, something is going to come and puncture that. I mean, that's the natural way. So it's sort of like a boil starts growing, and then somebody comes along and opens that boil up so the pus can come out. And when we get up here and we realize that we're actually kind of incompetent, basically, and there are a lot of people around us who are much more intelligent, much more sensitive, and, you know, we're just really not that great. That is a very healthy kind of thing to realize, and very helpful. It keeps things moving. And then you experience other things about yourself that are fabulous, that couldn't come out because we were trying to maintain this sort of mediocrity. I had a wonderful African-American teacher in graduate school. He was my favorite teacher. His name was Chuck Long. And he said, basically, the modern thing is being mediocre. And he said, people really work at it. You have to be mediocre. You can't be too good and you can't be too bad. You've got to be mediocre, and you have to be consistently mediocre. And this was in a situation where there was a group of people that we were meeting with, and he was basically, you know, I mean, this group was completely dysfunctional. It was a bunch of college professors. And he basically just got fed up, and he said, you know, do you see how hard these people work to remain mediocre? Well, that's a kind of comment on the modern situation. And what we're doing here is we are letting go of our mediocrity. And we are willing to be worse, and we're willing to be better. But the main thing is we're willing to be what we don't even know what it's going to be. Then the experience can begin to flow through. And we will, you know, I dare say in modern culture that most people are emotionally deprived. We're all emotionally deprived. We're emotionally starved. And we are feeling starved. And you go to other cultures, especially indigenous cultures, and there's much more of a, you know, feelings are, they cycle through much more easily. And so when we come and sit like this, a lot of feeling is going to come up, and a lot of states of mind that are unpleasant or unwanted or in some way unwelcome, you know, appreciate those. Appreciate that living up here, a lot of the time, what goes on in the weather is uncomfortable. It's dramatic, it's powerful, it's uncomfortable, it's unpredictable. And, you know, you can either hate it, you can hate every single goddamn raindrop that falls. Seriously, there are people who come on the land, they don't like the sun, they don't like the rain, they don't like the wind. They want to get back into their condo in Boulder and turn on the air conditioner and just keep it steady. But most people that come here, even though it isn't comfortable, it's either too cold or too hot or too wet or too windy, they really appreciate the unpredictability and the power of the situation. I mean, personally, living up here, there, in any situation, there's you, there's what you're trying to do, and there's the weather. And it's always a conversation. And many times, the time has come, I need to make this really important call to Naropa, and it's got to happen right now, and it's an emergency, and I pick my phone up, and the phones are out. And the phones maybe are gone for a day. This is an incredible blessing, where the heat goes out, or the water goes out, or we get 6.5 feet of snow. I mean, and your life is basically on hold for a week. You know, this kind of situation is, there's something very satisfying about having something real going on that is apart from your own mental imagination of what you want and how things are going to be. And our emotional life is exactly the same way. And our experiences, our interactions with others, our dreams, you know, dreams we have at night, or the inspirations that arise in us, painful things that happen, memories that come up, all of these are part of reality. And there is something in all of it that nourishes us and leads us beyond our own limited and, you know, frankly, very small little world. And what we're doing when we come and sit is we're beginning to tap into this deeper sense of being a human being, this deeper sense of being alive. And working with the body is a way of facilitating that process and encouraging that process, and also at the same time grounding ourselves. So we're more, it's kind of like a flower in a tree, you know, a flowering tree. If the hail comes, the flowers, the petals will be, they'll be broken and they'll be, you know, destroyed. But if the hail comes and there's a mountain, then the hail just, it rains down and it's rather beautiful. And most of us in Western culture, we're sort of like a flowering tree. We may be very elegant and beautiful, but we're not that grounded. The practice of meditation and working with the body makes us like a mountain. So that we, it's not even a matter of enduring different kinds of weather, emotional storms and experiences of the ups and downs of life. It's not just enduring them, but actually appreciating their beauty. And the more grounded we are, the more we can appreciate every storm of life, you know, has something for us. But we need to be grounded to do it. Hence the work with the body and using that as a vehicle to open up our experiential life much more fully.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Kechog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.